below, relinquished his hold and dropped off the bridge. That left me the painful task of coaxing Daniel to climb up. It took a long time, but again, his behavior wasn't out of character with how a scared Maroi might behave. I was just grateful he hadn't decided a real Maroi would have lost his grip and fallen. After that challenge came many more, but I fought on, never slowing down or letting exhaustion affect me. I slipped into battle mode, my senses focused on basic instincts. Fight, dodge, kill. And while staying tuned to those, I still had to be innovative and not fall into a lull. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to react to a surprise like the bridge. I managed it all, battling on with no other thoughts beyond accomplishing the tasks before me. I tried not to think of my instructors as people I knew. I treated them like Strigoi. I pulled no punches. When it finally ended, I almost didn't realize it. I was simply standing there in the middle of the field with no more attackers coming at me. I was alone. Slowly, I became more aware of the world's details. Crowds in the stands cheering. A few instructors nodding to each other as they joined in. The pounding of my own heart. It wasn't until a grinning Alberta tugged at my arm that I realized it was over. The test I'd waited for my entire life finished in what felt like a blink of an eye. "Come on," she said, wrapping her arm around my shoulder and guiding me toward the exit. "You need to get some water and sit down." Dazed, I let her lead me off the field, around which people were still cheering and crying my name. Behind us, I heard some people saying they had to take a break and fix the bridge. She led me back to the waiting area and gently pushed me onto a bench. Someone else sat beside me and handed me a bottle of water. I looked over and saw my mother. She had an expression on her face that I'd never seen before. Pure, radiant pride. "That was it?" I asked at last. She surprised me again with genuinely amused laughter. "That was it?" she repeated. "Rose, you were out there for almost an hour. You blew through that test with flying colors. Probably one of the best trials this school's ever seen." "Really? It just seemed..." Easy wasn't quite the right word. "It was a haze, that's all." My mom squeezed my hand. "You were amazing. I'm so, so proud of you." The realization of it all truly, truly hit me then, and I felt a smile of my own spreading over my lips. "Now what happens?" I asked. "Now you become a guardian." I'd been tattooed many times, but none of those events came close to the ceremony and fanfare that occurred while getting my promise mark. Before, I'd received Molniha marks for kills I'd made in unexpected tragic circumstances. Fighting Strigoi in Spokane, the school attack and rescue. Events that were cause for mourning, not celebration. After all those kills, we'd kind of lost count. And while Guardian tattoo artists still tried to log every individual kill, they'd finally given me a star-shaped mark that was a fancy way of saying we'd lost count. Tattooing isn't a fast process, even if you're getting a small one, and my entire graduating class had to get them. The ceremony took place in what was usually the Academy's dining room, a room they were able to remarkably transform into something as grand and elaborate as we'd find at the Royal Court. Spectators, friends, family, guardians, packed the room as Alberta called our names one at a time and read our scores as we approached the tattoo artist. The scores were important. They would be made public, and along with our overall school grades, influence our assignments. Maroi could request certain grads for their guardians. Lissa had requested me, of course, but even the best scores in the world might not compensate for all the black behavioral marks on my record. There were no Maroi at this ceremony, though, aside from the handful who had been invited as guests by the new graduates. Everyone else gathered was a Dampier, either one of the established guardians or about to become guardians like me. The guests sat in the back, and the senior guardians sat near the front. My classmates and I stood the whole time, maybe as some sort of last test of endurance. I didn't mind. I changed out of my torn and dirty clothes into simple slacks and a sweater, an outfit that seemed dressy while still retaining a solemn feel. It was a good call because the air in the room was thick with tension. All faces a mix of joy at our success, but also anxiety about our new and deadly role in the world. I watched with shining eyes as my friends were called up, surprised and impressed at many of the scores. Eddie Castile, a close friend, got a particularly high score in one-on-one Moroi protection. I couldn't help a smile as I watched the tattooist give Eddie his mark. "I wonder how he got his Moroi over the bridge," I murmured in an undertone. Eddie was pretty resourceful. Beside me, another friend of mine, Meredith, gave me a puzzled look. "What are you talking about?" Her voice was equally soft. "When we were chased onto the bridge with a Moroi, mine was Daniel." She still looked confused, and I elaborated. "And they put Strigoi on each side?" "I crossed the bridge," she whispered, "but it was just me being chased. I took my Moroi through a maze." A glare from a nearby classmate shut us up, and I hid my frown. Maybe I wasn't the only one who'd gone through the trial in a daze. Meredith had her facts screwed up. When my name was called, I heard a few gasps as Alberta read my scores. I had the highest in the class by far. I was kind of glad she didn't read my academic grades. They would have totally taken away some of the glory of the rest of my performance. I'd always done well in my combat classes, but math and history? Well, those were a bit lacking, particularly since I always seemed to be dropping in and out of school. My hair was pulled tightly into a bun, with every stray wisp held with hairpins so that the artist would have nothing to interfere with his work. I leaned forward to give him a good view and heard him grunt in surprise. With the back of my neck covered in marks, he'd have to be tricky. Usually a new guardian provided a blank canvas. This guy was good, though, and managed to delicately place the promise mark in the center of the nape of my neck after all. The promise mark looked like a long, stretched-out S with curly ends. He fitted in between the Molniya marks, letting it wrap around them like an embrace. The process hurt, but I kept my face blank, refusing to flinch. I was shown the final results in a mirror before he covered it up with a bandage so it would heal cleanly. After that, I rejoined my classmates and watched as the rest of them received their tattoos. It meant standing for another 2 hours, but I didn't mind. My brain was still reeling with everything that had happened today. I was a guardian. A real, honest-to-goodness guardian. And with that thought came questions. What would happen now? Would my scores be good enough to erase my record of bad behavior? Would I be Lissa's guardian? And what about Victor? What about Dimitri? I shifted uneasily as the full impact of the guardian ceremony hit me. This wasn't just about Dimitri and Victor. This was about me. About the rest of my life. School was over. I would no longer have teachers tracking my every move or correcting me when I made mistakes. All decisions would be on me when I was out protecting someone. Moroi and younger Dompiers would look to me as the authority. And I would no longer have the luxury of practicing combat 1 minute and lounging in my room the next. There were no clear-cut classes anymore. I would be on duty all the time. The thought was daunting. The pressure, almost too great. I'd always equated graduation with freedom. Now, I wasn't so sure. What new shape was my life going to take? Who would decide? And how could I reach Victor if I was assigned to guard anyone besides Lissa? Across the room, I met Lissa's eyes among the audience. They burned with a pride that matched my mother's, and she grinned when our gazes met. "Get that look off your face," she chastised through the bond. "You shouldn't look that anxious. Not today. You need to celebrate." I knew she was right. I could handle what was to come. My worries, which were many, could wait one more day, particularly since the exuberant mood of my friends and family ensured that I would celebrate. Abe, with that influence he always seemed to wield, had secured a small banquet room and thrown a party for me that seemed more suited to a royal debutante, not some lowly, reckless dompier. Before the event, I changed yet again. Prettier party clothes now seemed more appropriate than the formal Molniya ceremony outfit. I put on a short-sleeved emerald green wrap dress and hung my nazar around my neck, even though it didn't match. The nazar was a small pendant that looked like an eye, with different shades of blue circling it. In Turkey, where Abe came from, it was believed to offer protection. He'd given it to my mother years ago, and she'd in turn given it to me. By the time I'd put on makeup and brushed out my tangled hair into long, dark waves, because my tattoo bandages didn't go with the dress at all, I hardly looked like someone capable of fighting monsters or even throwing a punch. No, that wasn't quite true, I realized a moment later. Staring into the mirror, I was surprised to see a haunted look in my brown eyes. There was pain there. Pain and loss that even the nicest dress and makeup couldn't hide. I ignored it and set off for the party, promptly running into Adrian as soon as I stepped outside my dorm. Without a word, he swept me into his arms and smothered me with a kiss. I was totally caught off guard. I figured. Undead creatures didn't surprise me, but one flippant Royal Maroi could. And it was quite the kiss, one that I almost felt guilty about sinking into. I'd had concerns when first dating Adrian, but many of them had disappeared over time. After watching him flirt shamelessly and take nothing seriously for so long, I'd never expected to see such devotion from him in our relationship. I also hadn't expected to find my feelings for him growing, which seemed so contradictory considering I still loved Dimitri and was concocting impossible ways to save him. I laughed when Adrian set me down. Nearby, a few younger Maroi had stopped to watch us. Maroi dating Dampiers wasn't super uncommon at our age, but a notorious Dampier dating the Maroi queen's great-nephew? That was kind of out there, especially since it was widely known how much Queen Tatiana hated me. There had been few witnesses to my last meeting with her, when she'd screamed at me to stay away from Adrian, but word of that kind of thing always gets around. "Like the show?" I asked our voyeurs. Realizing they'd been busted, the Maroi kids hastily continued on their way. I turned back to Adrian and smiled. "What was that? It was kind of a big kiss to throw on me in public." "That," he said grandly, "was your reward for kicking so much ass in those trials." He paused. "It was also because you looked totally hot in that dress." I gave him a wry look. "Reward, huh? Meredith's boyfriend got her diamond earrings." He caught hold of my hand and gave an unconcerned shrug as we began to walk to the party. "You want diamonds? I'll give you diamonds. I'll shower you in them. Hell, I'll get you a gown made out of them, but it's going to be skimpy." "I think I'll settle for the kiss after all," I said, imagining Adrian dressing me like a swimsuit model. Or a pole dancer. The jewelry reference also suddenly brought on an unwanted memory, when Dimitri had held me captive in Siberia, lulling me into blissful complacency with his bites. He'd showered me with jewelry, too.
"I knew you were a badass," continued Adrian.
A warm summer breeze ruffled the brown hair he so painstakingly styled each day, and with his free hand, he absentmindedly tried to arrange it back into place.
"But I didn't realize just how much until I saw you dropping guardians out there."
"Does that mean you're going to be nicer to me?" I teased.
"I'm already nice to you," he said loftily. "Do you know how badly I want a cigarette right now? But no, I manfully suffer through nicotine withdrawal. All for you. But I think seeing you out there will make me a little more careful around you. That crazy dad of yours is kind of going to make me cautious, too."
I groaned, recalling how Adrian and Abe had been sitting together. "God, did you really have to hang out with him?"
"Hey, he's awesome. A little unstable, but awesome. We got along great."
Adrian opened the door to the building we were seeking.
"And he's a badass in his way, too. I mean, any other guy who wore scarves like that, he'd be laughed out of this school. Not Abe. He'd beat someone almost as badly as you would. In fact..."
Adrian's voice turned nervous. I gave him a surprised look. "In fact what?"
"Well, Abe said he liked me, but he also made it clear what he'd do to me if I ever hurt you or did anything bad.
Adrian grimaced.
In fact, he described what he'd do in very graphic detail. Then just like that, he switched to some random happy topic. I like the guy, but he's scary.
He's out of line! I came to a halt outside the party's room. Through the door, I heard the buzz of conversation. We were apparently among the last to arrive. I guessed that meant I'd be making a grand entrance fitting for the guest of honor. He has no right to threaten my boyfriends. I'm 18, an adult. I don't need his help. I can threaten my boyfriends myself. My indignation amused Adrian, and he gave me a lazy smile.
I agree with you, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to take his advice seriously. My face is too pretty to risk.
His face was pretty, but that didn't stop me from shaking my head in exasperation. I reached for the door's handle, but Adrian pulled me back. "White," he said. He drew me into his arms again, our lips meeting in another hot kiss. My body pressed to his, and I found myself confused by my own feelings and the realization that I was reaching a point where I might want more than just kissing.
"Okay," said Adrian when we'd finally broken away. "Now we can go in."
He had that same light tone to his voice, but in his dark green eyes, I saw the kindling of passion. I wasn't the only one considering more than just kissing. So far, we'd avoided discussing sex, and he'd actually been very good about not pressuring me. I think he knew I just wasn't ready after Dimitri. But in moments like these, I could see just how difficult it was for Adrian to hold back. It softened something inside of me, and standing on my tiptoes, I gave him another kiss.
"What was that?"
he asked a few moments later. I grinned. "Your reward." When we finally made it into the party, everyone in the room greeted me with cheers and proud smiles. A long time ago, I thrived on being the center of attention. That desire had faded a little, but now, I put on a confident face and accepted my loved one's praise with swagger and happiness. I held up my hands triumphantly, earning more clapping and approval. My party was almost as much of a blur as my trials. You never really realize how many people care about you until they all turn out to support you. It made me feel humble and almost a little teary. I kept that to myself, though. I could hardly start crying at my own victory party. Everyone wanted to talk to me, and I was surprised and delighted each time some new person approached me. It wasn't often that I had all the people I loved best in one place, and uneasily, I realized this opportunity might never come again.
"Well, you've finally got a license to kill. It's about time."
I turned and met the amused eyes of Christian Ozera, a one-time annoyance who'd become a good friend. So good, in fact, that in my joyous zeal, I reached out and hugged him, something he clearly didn't expect. I was surprising everyone today.
"Whoa, whoa,"
he said, backing up, flushing.
"It figures. You're the only girl who'd get all emotional about the thought of killing. I don't even want to think about what goes on when you and Ivajkov are alone."
"Hey, look who's talking. You're itching to get out there yourself." Christian shrugged by way of agreement. It was a standard rule in our world. Guardians protected Maroi. Maroi didn't get involved in battles. Yet after recent Strigoi attacks, a lot of Maroi, though hardly a majority, had begun to argue that it was time for Maroi to step up and start helping the Guardians. Fire users like Christian were particularly valuable since burning was one of the best ways to kill a Strigoi, along with staking and decapitation. The movement to teach Maroi to fight was currently, and purposely, stalled in the Maroi government, but that hadn't stopped some Maroi from practicing in secret. Christian was one of them. Glancing beside him, I blinked in astonishment. There was someone with him, someone I'd hardly noticed. Jill Mastrano hovered near him like a shadow. A Maroi freshman, well, soon to be a sophomore, Jill had come forward as someone who also wanted to fight. She had sort of become Christian's student. "Hey, Jill," I said, giving her a warm smile. "Thanks for coming." Jill flushed. She was determined to learn to defend herself, but she grew flustered among others, particularly around celebrities like me. Rambling was her nervous reaction.
I had to,
she said, brushing her long, light brown hair out of her face. Like always, it was a tangle of curls.
I mean, it's so cool what you did. At the trials, everyone was amazed. I heard one of the guardians saying that they'd never seen anything like you. So when Christian asked if I wanted to come, of course I had to. Oh!
Her light green eyes went wide.
I didn't even tell you congratulations. Sorry. Congratulations.
Beside her, Christian struggled to keep a straight face. I made no such attempts and laughingly gave her a hug, too. I was in serious danger of turning warm and fuzzy. I'd probably get my tough guardian status revoked if I kept this up. Thanks. Are you two ready to take on a Strigoi army yet?
Soon, said Christian. But we might need your backup.
He knew as well as I did that Strigoi were way out of their league. His fire magic had helped me a lot, but on his own? That'd be a different story. He and Jill were teaching themselves to use magic offensively, and when I'd had time between classes, I taught them a few combat moves. Jill's face fell a little.
It's going to stop once Christian's gone.
I turned to him. It was no surprise he'd be leaving. We'd all be leaving. What are you going to do with yourself? I asked. He shrugged.
Go to court with the rest of you? Aunt Tasha says we're going to have a talk about my future.
He grimaced. Whatever his plans were, it looked like they weren't the same as Tasha's. Most Royal Maroi would head off to elite colleges. I wasn't sure what Christian had in mind. It was standard practice after graduation for new guardians to go to the Maroi Royal Court for orientation and to get their assignments. We were all due to leave in a couple of days. Following Christian's gaze, I saw his aunt across the room, and so help me, she was talking to Abe. Tasha Ozera was in her late 20s, with the same glossy black hair and ice blue eyes that Christian had. Her beautiful face was marred, however, by some terrible scarring on one side, the result of injuries inflicted by Christian's own parents. Dimitri had been turned into a Strigoi against his will, but the Ozeras had purposely chosen to turn for the sake of immortality. It had ironically cost them their lives when the Guardians hunted them down. Tasha had raised Christian, when he wasn't at school, and was one of the main leaders in the movement supporting those Maroi who wanted to fight Strigoi. Scar or not, I admired her and still thought she was beautiful. From my wayward father's attitude, it was clear he did too. He poured her a glass of champagne and said something that made her laugh. She leaned forward, like she was telling him a secret, and he laughed in return. My jaw dropped. Even from this far away, it was obvious they were flirting. Dear God, I said with a shudder, hastily turning back to Christian and Jill. Christian seemed torn between smugness at my discomfort and his own unease at watching a woman he regarded as a mother get hit upon by a pirate mobster guy. A moment later, Christian's expression softened as he turned back to Jill and continued our conversation.
Hey, you don't need me, he said. You'll find others around here. You'll have your own superhero club before you know it.
I found myself smiling again, but my kindly feelings were suddenly shattered by a jolt of jealousy. It wasn't my own, though. It was Lyssa's, coming through the bond. Startled, I glanced around and spotted her across the room, giving Christian the look of death as he spoke to Jill. It's worth mentioning that Christian and Lyssa used to date. More than date. They'd been deeply in love, and honestly, they kind of still were. Unfortunately, recent events had badly strained their relationship, and Christian had broken up with her. He'd loved her but had lost his trust in her. Lyssa had spun out of control when another spirit user named Avery Lazar had sought to control her. We had eventually stopped Avery, and she was currently locked away in a mental institution, last I'd heard. Christian now knew the reasons for Lyssa's horrible behavior, but the damage was done. Lyssa had initially been depressed, but her sorrow had now turned to anger. She claimed she wanted nothing to do with him anymore, but the bond gave her away. She was always jealous of any girl he talked to, particularly Jill, whom he'd been spending a lot of time with lately. I knew for a fact there was nothing romantic going on there. Jill idolized him as some wise teacher, nothing more. If she had a crush on anyone, it was Adrian, who always treated her like a kid sister. We all kind of did, really. Christian followed my gaze, and his expression hardened. Realizing she had his attention, Lissa immediately turned away and began talking to the first guy she found, a good-looking dampier from my class. She turned on the flirtatious charm that came so easily to spirit users, and soon, both of them were laughing and chatting in a way similar to Abe and Tasha. My party had turned into a round of speed dating. Christian turned back to me.
Well, looks like she's got plenty to keep her busy.
I rolled my eyes. Lissa wasn't the only one who was jealous. Just as she grew angry whenever he hung out with other girls, Christian became prickly when she spoke to other guys. It was infuriating. Rather than admit they still had feelings and just needed to patch things up, those two idiots just kept displaying more and more hostility toward each other. Will you stop already and actually try to talk to her like a rational person someday? I groaned.
Sure, he said bitterly. The day she starts acting like a rational person.
Oh my God, you guys are going to make me rip my hair out.
It'd be a waste of nice hair, said Christian. Besides, she's made her attitude perfectly clear.
I started to protest and tell him how stupid he was, but he had no intention of sticking around to hear a lecture I'd already given a dozen times.
Come on, Jill, he said. Rose needs to mingle more.
He quickly stepped away, and I had half a mind to go beat some sense into him when a new voice spoke. When are you going to fix that? Tasha was standing next to me, shaking her head at Christian's retreat. Those two need to be back together. I know that. You know that. But they can't seem to get it through their heads. Well, you'd better get on it, she said. If Christian goes to college across the country, it'll be too late. There was a dry and exasperated note in her voice when she mentioned Christian going to college. Lissa was going to Lehigh, a university near the court, per an arrangement with Tatiana. Lissa would get to attend a bigger university than Maroy usually went to, in exchange for spending time at the court and learning the royal trade. I know, I said in exasperation. But why am I the one who has to fix it? Tasha grinned. Because you're the only one forceful enough to make them see reason. I decided to let Tasha's insolence go, mostly because her talking to me meant that she wasn't talking to Abe. Glancing across the room, I suddenly stiffened. He was now talking to my mother. Snatches of their conversation came to me through the noise.
Janine, he said winningly. You haven't aged a day. You could be Rose's sister. Do you remember that night in Cappadocia?
My mother actually giggled. I had never heard her do that before. I decided I never wanted to again. Of course. And I remember how eager you were to help me when my dress strap broke. Dear God, I said. He's unstoppable. Tasha looked puzzled until she saw what I was talking about. Abe? He's actually pretty charming. I groaned. Excuse me. I headed toward my parents. I accepted that they'd once had a romance, one that led to my conception, but that didn't mean I wanted to watch them relive it. They were recounting some walk on the beach when I reached them. I promptly tugged Abe's arm away. He was standing way too close to her. Hey, can I talk to you? I asked. He looked surprised but shrugged.
Certainly.
He gave my mother a knowing smile.
We'll talk more later.
Is no woman safe around here? I demanded as I led him away.
What are you talking about?
We came to a stop by the punch bowl. You're flirting with every woman in this room. My chastising didn't faze him.
Well, there are so many lovely women here. Is that what you wanted to talk to me about?
No,
I wanted to talk to you about threatening my boyfriend. You had no right to do that.
His dark eyebrows shot up.
What, that? That was nothing. Just a father looking out for his daughter.
Most fathers don't threaten to disembowel their daughter's boyfriends.
That's not true. And anyway, that's not what I actually said. It was much worse.
I sighed. He seemed to delight in my exasperation.
Think of it as a graduation gift. I'm proud of you. Everyone knew you'd be good, but no one knew you'd be that good.
He winked.
They certainly didn't expect you to destroy their property.
What property?
The bridge.
I frowned. I had to. It was the most efficient way. God, that was a bitch of a challenge. What'd the other grads do? They didn't actually fight in the middle of that thing, did they?
Abe shook his head, loving every minute of his superior knowledge.
No one else was put in that situation.
Of course they were. We all faced the same tests.
Not you. While planning the trials, the Guardians decided you needed something extra. Something special. After all, you'd been out fighting in the real world.
What? The volume of my voice caught the attention of a few others. I lowered it, and Meredith's earlier words came back to me.
That's not fair.
He didn't seem concerned.
You're superior to the others. Making you do easy things wouldn't have been fair.
I'd faced a lot of ridiculous things in my life, but this was pretty out there.
So they had me do that crazy bridge stunt instead? And if they were surprised I cut it, then what the hell else did they expect me to do? How else was I supposed to survive that?
He
stroked his chin absentmindedly.
I honestly don't think they knew.
Oh, for God's sake. This is unbelievable.
Why are you so mad? You passed.
Because they put me in a situation they didn't even know how to get out of.
I gave him a suspicious look.
And how do you even know about this? This is all Guardian business.
An expression I didn't like at all came over his face.
Ah, well, I was with your mother last night and...
Whoa, okay, just stop. I interrupted. I do not want to hear what you and my mother were doing last night. I think that'd be worse than the bridge. He grinned.
Both are in the past, so no need to worry now. Enjoy your success.
I'll try. Just don't do me any more favors with Adrian, okay? I mean, I'm glad you came to support me, but that's more than enough. Abe gave me a canny look, reminding me that underneath that swagger, he was indeed a shrewd and dangerous man.
You were more than happy to have me do you a favor after your return from Russia.
I grimaced. He had a point. Seeing as he had managed to get a message into a high-security prison, even if it hadn't led to anything, he still got points. Okay, I admitted. That was pretty amazing, and I'm grateful. I still don't know how you pulled that off. Suddenly, like a dream you recall a day later, I remember the thought I'd had just before my trials. I lowered my voice.
You didn't actually go there, did you?
He snorted.
Of course not. I wouldn't set foot in that place. I simply worked my network.
Where is that place? I asked, hoping I sounded bland. He wasn't fooled.
Why do you want to know?
Because I'm curious. Convicted criminals always disappear without a trace. I'm a guardian now, and I don't even know anything about our own prison system. Is there just one prison? Are there lots?
Abe didn't answer right away. He was studying me carefully. In his business, he suspected everyone of ulterior motives. As his daughter, I was probably doubly suspect. It was in the genes. He must have underestimated my potential for insanity because he said at last.
There's more than one. Victor's in one of the worst. It's called Tarasov.
Where is it?
Right now.
He considered.
In Alaska, I think.
What do you mean, right now?
It moves throughout the year. Right now, it's in Alaska. Later, it'll be in Argentina.
He gave me a sly smile, apparently wondering how astute I was.
Can you guess why?
No. Wait. Sunlight. It made perfect sense. Alaska's got almost nonstop daylight this time of year, but nonstop night in the winter. I think he was prouder of my realization than of my trials. Any prisoners trying to escape would have a hard time. In full sun, no Maroi fugitive would get very far. Not that anyone can escape through that level of security anyway. I tried to ignore how forbidding that sounded. Seems like they'd put it pretty far north in Alaska then, I said, hoping to worm out the actual location indirectly. You get more light that way, he chuckled.
Even I can't tell you that. That's information the Guardians keep close, buried in their headquarters.
I froze. Headquarters? Abe, despite being usually observant, didn't notice my reaction. His eyes were watching something across the room.
Is that Renee Zelsky? My, my. She's grown lovely over the years.
I grudgingly waved him away, largely because I wanted to chase this new plan in my mind, and because Renee wasn't anyone I knew very well, which made him hitting on her less appalling.
Well, don't let me stop you. Go lure more women into your web.
Abe didn't need much prodding. Alone, I let my brain spin, wondering if my developing scheme had any chance of success. His words had sparked a new plan in my mind. It wasn't much crazier than most of my others. Across the room, I met Lissa's jade eyes again. With Christian out of sight, her mood had improved. She was enjoying herself and was excited about the adventures ahead of us, now that we were free and out in the world. My mind flashed back to the anxieties I'd felt earlier in the day. We might be free now, but reality would catch up with us soon. The clock was ticking. Dimitri was waiting, watching. I wondered briefly if I'd still get his weekly letters now that I'd be leaving the school. I smiled at her, feeling kind of bad that I'd be ruining her mood when I told her we might now have a very real chance of busting out Victor Dashkov. Chapter 3. The next couple of days were strange. The other novices and I might have had the flashiest graduation, but we weren't the only ones finishing our education at St. Vladimir's. The Maroi had their own commencement ceremony, and campus grew packed with visitors. Then, almost as quickly as they came, parents disappeared, taking their sons and daughters with them. Royal Maroi left to spend their summers with their parents at luxury estates, many in the southern hemisphere, where the days were shorter this time of year. Ordinary Maroi left with their parents too, off to more modest homes, possibly getting summer jobs before college. And of course, with school wrapping up for the summer, all the other students left too. Some with no family to go home to, usually Don Pierre's, stayed year-round, taking special electives, but they were the minority. Campus grew emptier each day as my classmates and I waited for the day when we'd be taken to the royal court. We made our farewells to others, Maroi moving on or younger Dompiers who'd soon be following in our footsteps. One person I was sad to part with was Jill. I happened to catch her as I was walking toward Lissa's dorm the day before my court trip. There was a woman with Jill, presumably her mother, and both were carrying boxes. Jill's face lit up when she saw me.
"Hey, Rose! I said goodbye to everyone else but couldn't find you," she said excitedly.
I smiled. "Well, I'm glad you caught me." I couldn't tell her that I'd been saying goodbye, too. I'd spent my last day at St. Vladimir's walking all the familiar sights, starting with the elementary campus where Lissa and I had first met in kindergarten. I'd explored the halls and corners of my dorms, walked past favorite classrooms, and even visited the chapel. I'd also passed a lot of time in areas filled with bittersweet memories, like the training areas where I'd first gotten to know Dimitri. The track where he used to make me run laps,
the cabin where we'd finally given in to each other. It had been one of the most amazing nights of my life, and thinking about it always brought me both joy and pain. Jill didn't need to be burdened with any of that, though. I turned toward her mother and started to offer my hand until I realized she couldn't shake it while maneuvering the box. "I'm Rose Hathaway. Here, let me carry that." I took it before she could protest because I was certain she would. "Thank you," she said, pleasantly surprised. I fell in step with them as they began walking again. "I'm Emily Mastrano. Jill's told me a lot about you."
"Oh yeah?"
I asked, giving Jill a teasing smile.
"Not that much, just how I hang out with you sometimes."
There was a slight warning in Jill's green eyes, and it occurred to me that Emily probably didn't know her daughter practiced forbidden forms of Strigoi-killing magic in her free time.
"We like having Jill around,"
I said, not blowing her cover. "And one of these days, we're going to teach her to tame that hair." Emily laughed. "I've been trying for almost 15 years. Good luck." Jill's mother was stunning. The two didn't resemble each other much, at least not superficially. Emily's lustrous hair was straight and black, her eyes deep blue and long-lashed. She moved with a willowy grace, very different from Jill's always self-conscious walk. Yet, I could see the shared genes here and there, the heart-shaped faces and lip shapes. Jill was still young, and as she grew into her features, she'd likely be a heartbreaker herself someday, something she was probably oblivious to right now. Hopefully, her self-confidence would grow.
"Where's home for you guys?" I asked.
"Detroit," said Jill, making a face.
"It's not that bad," laughed her mom.
"There are no mountains, just highways."
"I'm part of a ballet company there," Emily explained. "So we stay where we can pay the bills."
I think I was more surprised that people went to the ballet in Detroit than that Emily was a ballerina. It made sense watching her, and really, with their tall and slim builds, Maroi were ideal dancers as far as humans were concerned.
"Hey, it's the big city," I told Jill. "Enjoy the excitement while you can before you come back to the boring middle of nowhere."
Of course, illicit combat training and Strigoi attacks were hardly boring, but I wanted to make Jill feel better.
"And it won't be that long.
Maroi's summer vacations were barely 2 months. Parents were eager to return their children to the safety of the academy."
"I guess," said Jill, not sounding convinced.
We reached their car, and I loaded the boxes into the trunk.
"I'll email you when I can," I promised. "And I bet Christian will too. Maybe I can even talk Adrian into it."
Jill brightened, and I was happy to see her return to her normal, overexcited self.
"Really? That would be great. I want to hear everything that goes on at court. You'll probably get to do all sorts of cool things with Lissa and Adrian, and I bet Christian will find out all sorts of things. About things."
Emily didn't seem to notice Jill's lame editing attempt, and instead fixed me with a pretty smile.
"Thanks for your help, Rose. It was great to meet you."
"You too." Jill had thrown herself into me with a hug.
"Good luck with everything," she said. "You're so lucky. You're going to have such a great life now."
I returned the hug, unable to explain how jealous of her I was. Her life was still safe and innocent. She might resent spending a summer in Detroit, but the stay would be brief, and soon she'd be back in the familiar and easy world of St. Vladimir's. She wouldn't be setting out into the unknown and its dangers. It was only after she and her mother had driven off that I could bring myself to respond to her comment.
"I hope so," I murmured, thinking about what was to come. "I hope so."
My classmates and select Maroi flew out early the next day, leaving the Rocky Mountains of Montana behind for the rolling hills of Pennsylvania. The royal court was a lot like I remembered, with the same imposing, ancient feel that St. Vladimir's tried to impart with its towering buildings and intricate stone architecture. But the school also seemed to want to show off a wise, studious air, whereas the court was more ostentatious.
It was like the buildings themselves tried to make sure we all knew that this was the seat of power and royalty among the Moroi. The royal court wanted us to be amazed and maybe a little cowed. And even though I'd been here before, I was still impressed. The doors and windows of the tan stone buildings were embossed and framed in pristine golden decorations. They were a far cry from the brightness I'd seen in Russia, but I realize now that the court's designers had modeled these buildings off the old European ones, the fortresses and palaces of St. Petersburg. St. Vladimir's had benches and paths in the quads and courtyards, but the court went a step further. Fountains and elaborate statues of past rulers adorned the lawns, exquisite marble works that had previously been hidden in snow. Now, in the full throes of summer, they were bright and on display. And everywhere, everywhere were flowers on trees, bushes, paths. It was dazzling. It made sense that new grads would visit the Guardian's central administration. But it occurred to me that there was another reason they brought new Guardians here in the summer. They wanted my classmates and me to see all of this, to be overwhelmed and appreciative of the glory for which we were fighting. Looking at the faces of the new graduates, I knew the tactic was working. Most had never been here before. Lissa and Adrian had been on my flight, and the three of us clustered together as we walked with the group. It was as warm as it had been in Montana, but the humidity here was much thicker. I was sweating after only a little light walking.
"You did bring a dress this time, right?" asked Adrian.
"Of course," I said. "They've got some fancy things they want us to go to aside from the main reception, although they might give me my black and white for that." He shook his head, and I noticed his hand start to move toward his pocket before hesitating and pulling back. He might have been making progress in quitting smoking, but I was pretty sure the subconscious urge to automatically reach for a pack when outdoors was hard to get rid of so quickly.
"I mean for tonight, for dinner."
I glanced questioningly at Lissa. Her schedule at court always had assorted functions thrown into it that average people didn't attend. With my new and uncertain status, I wasn't sure if I'd be going with her. I sensed her puzzlement through the bond and could tell that she didn't have a clue about any special dinner plans. "What dinner?" I asked.
"The one I set up with my family."
"The one you..." I came to an abrupt halt and stared wide-eyed, not liking the smirk on his face one bit. "Adrian?" A few of the new grads gave me curious looks and continued walking around us.
"Come on, we've been going out a couple of months. Meeting parents is part of the dating ritual. I've met your mom. I even met your scary-ass dad. Now it's your turn. I guarantee none of my family's going to make the kind of suggestions your dad did."
I'd actually kind of met Adrian's dad before. Or, well, I'd seen him at a party. I doubted he had any idea who I was, my crazy reputation aside. I knew almost nothing about Adrian's mother. He actually spoke very little about his family members. Well, most of them. "Just your parents?" I asked warily. "Any other family I should know about?"
"Well..."
Adrian's hand twitched again. I think this time he wanted a cigarette as some sort of protection from the warning note in my voice. Lissa, I observed, seemed highly amused by all this.
"My favorite great aunt might stop by."
"Tatiana?" I exclaimed. For the 100th time, I wondered how I had lucked out with a guy related to the leader of the entire Moroi world. "She hates me! You know what happened the last time we talked." Her Royal Majesty had laid into me, yelling about how I was too trashy to hook up with her nephew and how she had great plans for him and Lissa.
"I think she's come around."
"Oh, come on."
"No, really."
He almost looked like he was telling the truth.
"I talked to my mom the other day, and, I don't know, Aunt Tatiana doesn't seem to hate you as much."
I frowned, and the three of us began to walk again.
"Maybe she admires your recent vigilante work," mused Lissa.
"Maybe," I said, but I didn't really believe it. If anything, Me going rogue should have made me more despicable in the Queen's eyes. I felt kind of betrayed that Adrian had sprung this dinner on me, but there was nothing to be done about it now. The only bright side was that I had the impression he was teasing me about his aunt stopping by. I told him I'd go, and my decision put him in a good enough mood that he didn't ask too many questions when Lissa and I said we were going to do our own thing that afternoon. My classmates were all getting a tour of the court and its grounds as part of their indoctrination, but I'd seen it all before and was able to wiggle out of it. Lissa and I dropped our belongings off in our rooms and then set out to the far side of the court, where the not-so-royal people lived.
"Are you going to tell me yet what this other part of your plan is?" asked Lissa. Ever since Abe had explained about Victor's prison, I'd been making another mental list of the problems we'd have breaking into it. Mainly, there were two, which was one less than I'd initially had since talking to Abe. Not that things were really much easier. First, we had no clue where in Alaska this place was. Second, we didn't know what the prison's defenses and layouts were like. We had no idea what we had to bust through. Yet, something told me all of these answers could be found in one source, which meant I really only had one immediate problem: how to reach that source. Fortunately, I knew someone who might be able to help get us there. "We're going to see Mia," I told her. Mia Rinaldi was a former Maroi classmate of ours. Former enemy, actually. She was also the poster child for total personality makeovers. She'd gone from a scheming bitch who was willing to crush and sleep with anyone in her quest for popularity to a down-to-earth, confident girl eager to learn to defend herself and others from Strigoi. She lived here at court with her father.
"You think Mia knows how to break into a prison?"
"Mia's good, but I don't think she's that good. She can probably help us get intel, though." Lissa groaned.
"I can't believe you just used the word intel. This really is turning into a spy movie."
She spoke flippantly, but I could feel the worry within her. The light tone was masking her fear, the unease she still felt about freeing Victor, despite her promise to me. Those non-royals who worked and did ordinary things at court lived in apartments far from the Queen's quarters and receiving hall. I'd gotten Mia's address in advance, and we set out across the perfectly manicured grounds, grumbling to each other along the way about the hot day. We found her at home, casually dressed in jeans and a t-shirt with a popsicle in her hand. Her eyes widened when she saw us outside her door.
"Well, I'll be damned," she said. I laughed. It was the kind of response I'd give. "Nice to see you, too. Can we come in?"
"Of course," she stepped aside. "You want a popsicle?"
Did I ever? I took a grape one and sat with her and Lissa in the small living room. The place was a far cry from the opulence of royal guest housing, but it was cozy and clean and undoubtedly well-loved by Mia and her father.
"I knew the grads were coming," Mia said, brushing blonde curls out of her face. "But I wasn't sure if you were with them or not. Did you even graduate?"
"I did," I said. "Got the promise mark and everything."
I lifted my hair so she could see the bandage.
"I'm surprised they let you back in after you took off on your killing spree. Or did you get extra credit for that?"
Apparently, Mia had heard the same tall tale about my adventures that everyone else had. That was fine with me. I didn't want to talk about the truth. I didn't want to talk about Dimitri.
"Do you think anyone could stop Rose from doing what she wants?" asked Lissa with a smile.
She was trying to keep us from getting into too much detail about my past whereabouts, for which I was grateful. Mia laughed and crunched on a big chunk of lime ice. It was a wonder she didn't get brain freeze.
"True."
Her smile faded as she swallowed the bite. Her blue eyes, always shrewd, studied me in silence for a few moments.
"And Rose wants something now." "Hey, we're just happy to see you," I said.
"I believe you, but I also believe you've got an ulterior motive."
Lissa's smile grew. She was amused by me being caught in my spy game.
"What makes you say that? Can you read Rose that well, or do you just always assume she's got an ulterior motive?"
Now Mia smiled again.
"Both." She scooted forward on the couch, fixing me with a serious look. When had she grown so perceptive?
Okay, no point in wasting time. What do you need my help with?
I sighed. Busted. I need to get inside the Guardian's main security office. Beside me, Lissa made a sort of strangled noise. I felt kind of bad for her. While she could conceal her thoughts from me on occasion, there wasn't much she did or said that came as a true surprise. Me? I continually blindsided her. She had no clue what was coming half the time. But honestly, if we were planning on springing a renowned criminal out of prison, then breaking into a security office shouldn't have been that big of a shock.
Wow, said Mia. You don't waste time with the little stuff.
Her grin twitched a bit.
Of course, you wouldn't come to me with the little stuff. You could do that yourself.
Can you get me, us, in there? I asked. You're friendly with some of the guardians here, and your dad has access to a lot of places. I didn't know Mr. Rinaldi's exact job, but I thought it was maintenance related.
What are you looking for? She asked.
She held up a hand when I opened my mouth to protest.
No, I don't need details, just a general idea so I can figure this out. I know you're not going there just to tour the place.
I need some records, I explained. Her eyebrows rose.
Personnel? Trying to get yourself a job?
No. Huh. That wasn't a bad idea, considering my precarious position with being assigned Alyssa. But no. One issue at a time. I need some records about outside security at other places. Schools, royal homes, prisons. I tried to keep my expression casual as I mentioned that last one. Mia was on board with some crazy things, but even she had her limits. I figured they must keep that stuff there.
They do, she said. But most of it's electronic. And no offense, but that might even be beyond your abilities. Even if we could get to one of their computers, everything's password protected. And if they walk away, they lock the computers. I'm guessing you haven't become a hacker since the last time I saw you.
No, certainly not. And unlike the heroes of those spy movies Lissa teased me about, I had no tech-savvy friends who could even come close to breaking that kind of encryption and security. Damn. I stared glumly at my feet, wondering if I had any chance at all of getting more information out of Abe.
But, said Mia, if the information you need isn't too current, they might still have paper copies.
I jerked my head up. Where?
They've got mass storage rooms, tucked away in one of the basements. Files and files, still under lock and key, but probably easier to get to than fighting the computers. Again, depends on what you need. How old it is.
Abe had given me the impression that Tarasov Prison had been around for a while. Surely there was a record of it in these archives. I didn't doubt the Guardians had gone digital a while ago, which meant we might not find up-to-the-minute details on the place's security, but I'd settle for a blueprint.
It might be what we need. Can you get us in?
Mia was quiet for several seconds, and I could see her mind worrying.
Possibly. She glanced at Lissa. Can you still compel people into being your slaves?
Lissa grimaced.
I don't like to think of it like that, but yeah, I can.
It was another of Spirit's perks. Mia considered a few moments more and then gave a quick nod.
Okay, come back around 2 and we'll see what we can do.
2 in the afternoon for the rest of the world meant the middle of the night for Maroi, who ran on a nocturnal schedule. Being out in broad daylight didn't feel particularly sneaky, but I had to figure Mia's planning here was based on the fact that there would also be fewer people around that time of day. I was trying to decide if we should socialize more or head out when a knock interrupted my thoughts. Mia flinched and suddenly looked uncomfortable. She rose to get the door, and a familiar voice drifted down the hall toward us.
Sorry I'm early, but I...
Christian stepped into the living room. He abruptly shut up when he saw Lissa and me. Everyone seemed frozen, so it looked like it was up to me to pretend like this wasn't a horribly awkward situation.
Hey, Christian, I said cheerfully. How's it going?
His eyes were on Lissa, and it took him a moment to drag them to me.
Fine.
He glanced at Mia.